Welcome everyone to VIP Spotlight for the month of May. I want to thank each and every one of you for taking time out of your evening to come out to support the VIP of the month, which is Parker Waddington. First off, today is Memorial Day, and in remembrance of all those that have given their life in different armed services and fought to protect our freedom and our rights, as well as our own Parker, which served in the Army. Let's take a moment and listen to this.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Thank you very much, Teresa, and thank you for asking me.
And Parker, I would like to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for your service in the military, which still gives us our freedom. So thank you very much.
You're more than welcome, as any veteran will tell you.
It is my pleasure to interview Parker Waddington, and he was born on August the 3rd, 1935, and he currently lives in Springfield, Missouri. Now, Parker, are you neighbors to Homer Simpson by chance?
No, I've never met Homer, but I live about 70 miles from Franklin Johnson, who I know quite well.
Oh, it's kind of just a little, I don't know if you watch the Simpsons on TV, Homer and Bart Simpson. He lives in Springfield, Missouri. So just a little joke there, Parker.
Oh, yes, we're all very much aware that Homer's supposed to live here.
One of the things I'd like to mention first up is Parker is one of the first founding fathers of our site, VIP Conduit. And Parker, I would like to say thank you, because VIP has really been very important in my life over the last 8 months. So I'd like to say thank you for being one of the first founding fathers.
Well, as you said, I'm only one of them, but I know I certainly love it.
Okay, we're going to get started. Parker, will you tell us a little bit about where you were born and raised?
Okay, as you said, I was born on Saturday, August 3rd, 1935 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And for those of you that aren't familiar with that part of the country, Cedar Rapids is more or less east central Iowa. It's located more or less halfway between Missouri and Minnesota. And it's about 70 miles to the west of the Mississippi River, and about 120 miles to the east of Des Moines, which is pretty much in the center of Iowa. And I was born and raised there. I went through all of their public school system. I went to Cole College, which is a Presbyterian-oriented college that's been in there for over 100 plus years. And went all through that there. And then I ended up teaching in Cedar Rapids, Iowa throughout a lot of my lifetime.
Interesting, because I did not know. I was thinking that possibly you were from Springfield, Missouri all of your life. So how interesting. Parker, tell us a little bit about your parents and if you had brothers and sisters.
I am an only child. My mother, her name was Elma Luella, which she was, we always like to kid her about that. She got stuck with that. Elma Luella Waddington, and my dad was Basil Randall Waddington. And I was actually pretty much raised by my grandparents. My dad was a officer in the Army, and when Pearl Harbor happened, he reported for duty, and during his physical, they discovered he had tuberculosis. And so he was then sent to the Oakdale Sanitarium there in Iowa and spent about 15 or so years there. So he was gone pretty much my entire lifetime. And my grandparents pretty much raised me. As I said, I am an only child. I did actually have a sister, but she was stillborn.
Wow, what a terrible thing to happen to your dad, to be in that part of the war and then to be to have tuberculosis. I can't even talk this evening. And I want to thank you for your father's service as well. Parker, tell us a little bit about your eyesight. I understand that you went blind later in life. So that tells me that you went through mainstream school. So tell us a little bit about when you lost your sight and where you were at in that particular part of your life.
As you say, I was born sighted, and actually, as I understand it, my mother was actually warned when I was born that I could have vision problems, but she never told me. I didn't even find out about it until I was about 16, when I was saw an ophthalmologist, and he told me that I had a definite problem. But basically, I went through the public school system, you know, as a sighted child. I drove a car until I was in my mid-30s. I have retinitis pigmentosa, which a number of us have, so a lot of us know all about that. And I was actually in the military, and they didn't discover it until I was just about to go on active duty. I should explain that. At that time, they had a program where you could enlist in the active reserve, and you could serve on weekly meetings and summer camps until you graduated college, and then you went on active duty. And when I was just about to go on active duty, is when they discovered my RP, actually, and kind of a humorous story. We were on a night march, and the column turned, and I failed to turn. So we figured out there was something wrong.
Well, I also have RP, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I would think that was that the first sign that you had trouble with your eyesight was when you were in the military, or did you notice before that, Parker?
I didn't really notice anything until later on, after I learned I had RP and started learning about it, and discovered that loss of night blindness is one of the very first symptoms. And I, you know, when I was a child and we were playing games at night, I ran into a number of objects, but I thought, hey, that's normal. You know, you can't see it. And I didn't realize that I was actually having a problem. So, no, I really didn't know much about it until, as I said, I was about 16 or 17 before I was really informed that I had an issue with it.
So, did your infantry react when they kept going in and you failed to turn with them? Did your buddies say, hey, Parker, what's up? Or how did that go down?
No, I was in the guys that I were in there. We were all pretty close friends, and they really didn't give me much static about it. But when that incident happened, I had some really good officers in our outfit, and they said, well, we need to look into this, because I was, as I said, I was scheduled to go on active duty because I, at that point, I graduated college. And so they sent me back they sent me back to the military doctors and they further diagnosed it then, and then I was given the medical discharge.
Okay, Parker, let's go back just a little bit in time. Tell us a little bit about your education. Of course, we know you went through elementary school and went into high school. Were you a good student? And tell us a little bit about your when you graduated and your education after high school.
Well, I would have to admit I was very much an average student. I was too busy running around with my buddies to worry too much about school when I was in high school. When I got to college, my first couple of years of college were somewhat a repeat of my high school experience. But then I had met by that point the young lady that I ended up marrying, who gave me fits about not working harder on my grades. And so then I started to work harder on my grades, and then I did pretty much turn around, got straight A's in the remainder of my last couple of years of college. So, you know, as I said, I just was really having a pretty good time until I realized that I needed to get serious.
And what did you major in college, and did you do 2-year, 4-year?
Actually, I started out majoring in journalism because of the fact that I was very much into photography and had done a lot of professional photography while I was in my late teens and early 20s. And so I started in journalism, and about partway through my sophomore year, the school dropped journalism. And I was given the choice of either having to change and go to the University of Iowa, which would require me to drive about 25 miles every day, or change my major. And my second greatest interest was history. So I ended up majoring in history. And because of the journalism interest, I ended up with a minor in English. And I'm still a big history buff today.
Well, this is interesting because I didn't know you were into photography. What brought your interest into that, Parker? And do you have any regrets about not following that path?
No, actually, I don't have any regrets. I just enjoyed taking pictures, and I worked for a number of years in a photographic shop there in Cedar Rapids, and got in, you know, did some commercial photography with them, and ended up being the manager of that store. After I had graduated from college for a period of time. But I just enjoyed getting back in the dark room and what you could do with the chemicals and the developing the pictures, and kind of just had, you know, just thoroughly enjoyed doing that.
Well, I'm just finding out more and more interesting things about you. There are more facets to you than I thought, Parker. Excellent. Parker, tell me and the audience, what is one of the most fondest childhood memories that you can recall?
Well, if you're specifying childhood, that gets a little more difficult. I think probably one of my fondest memories was, and it had to do with the young lady that I married, was an Eastern Iowa band festival. I was in the high school marching band. And we had a big band festival that went on all day long, and I spent the whole day with a young lady who later on then married, and I still remember that very fondly.
What about when you were a young boy? Any particular, I know you said you were raised by your grandparents, so any fond memory there that you can remember, an outing or something that you did with them that really sticks out in your mind?
Not really in any particular thing. I was a very average boy. My grandfather and I used to like to hunt together, and we went out pheasant hunting quite a bit, and I was very much into rifle, you know, shooting a rifle for target practice, and the National Rifle Association, and won a number of marksmanship awards through them. But yeah, I was pretty much an average boy. I played football and baseball and basketball and all that stuff, and just thoroughly enjoyed that time with my friends.
All right, Parker, we're going to move on into your military. When you decided to join the Army, well, let me rephrase that. Were you drafted or did you join? And tell us a little bit about your career in the military or your time in the military.
No, I actually enlisted. I was in the medical depot, medical supply depot, and I enlisted in that. And one of the large reasons that I did was that that time they offered, as I mentioned earlier, they gave you the opportunity of joining the reserves during your college, and which allows you then to complete your college, and then after graduation you could go in and serve your active duty. And that's what I did. And I actually, my technical job was clerk typist. That was my MOS, as they call it. But actually, because of the fact that we were a reserve unit, and if we were activated, would not know necessarily what kind of additional men we were going to have, we did a lot of job rotation. So I drove ambulances and virtually everything else at one time or another.
Well, in speaking, you did say that you did have some active duty training. Tell us a little bit about that.
We went each summer for a couple of weeks of active duty to various bases. We were stationed for a while at Fort Leonard Wood, and then we went to two different times to Fitzsimmons Army Hospital out in Denver, where we had a little more medical related training. But you go, you know, as a reservist, you go through pretty much the same basic training, learning to handle the rifle and basic infantry tactics. And you know, you are pretty much first of all a rifleman, and then your job comes second. And so, you know, we did, and then we had meetings every week all year long.
Well, I know you said that you were received a medical discharge. How long were you in the military before that actually took place? Or was that pretty quick after you went into the military after college?
I was actually in the Army 4 years before that happened. And I have, you asked me when we were talking if I had a particular incident that I particularly remember in the military, and I actually do. And it has to do with the fact that I eventually lost my sight, because as a result, I kind of look back fondly on this. We were familiarizing ourselves with the M1 carbine, and we were quite happy with that. As any soldier who was in the Army from World War II through basically 1960 can tell you that the M1 rifle is a 30-06 gas semi-automatic gas-operated rifle, which weighs about 13¾ pounds. And so when they let us handle the M1 carbine, which is about one-third smaller and weighs about 9 pounds, we were quite, you know, pleased with that. So we were doing familiarization firing with it, and one of the things we had to do was to, we were on a 100-yard range, the target was 100 yards from where we were, and we were handed the rifle and two clips of ammunition. One, each of them had four rounds in it. We were standing up. They blow the whistle. You had to drop to a prone position, fire four rounds, roll to your side, and replace the clip with the other one, and then roll back and fire four more rounds. And I'm still very happy about this, because when I got done and they marked the target, at 100 yards, I had put 8 rounds in the bullseye with a, and you could cover them with, well, not quite cover them with a quarter, but almost cover them with a quarter. And since I ended up being blind, I always found that as a rather, you know, kind of a favorite memory.
Well, that was my next question about your fondest memory while you were in the military. So you've answered that, but tell me, were you experiencing problems with your RP at the time, or could you see that target fairly well?
Okay, if people that are familiar with RP, what happens with it is you lose your night vision first, and then your peripheral vision goes next. And the last, very last thing to go is that central vision. And it's kind of like looking through a straw, so to speak, which is ideal for firing a rifle because that's what you're doing. You know, you're looking at a very small spot. So no, I actually was pretty accurate with a rifle.
You were accurate, but you were experiencing problems with your RP at other times, such as night and your peripheral vision. Had it diminished very much at that time, Parker, your peripheral?
No. By the time the Army discovered I had RP, it was just basically commencing. I really did not have experienced real problems. I was in my 30s. And that was when it became, I drove until I was in my 30s. And then by that point, the peripheral had dropped down to the point where it was an issue.
Okay, Parker, so moving on, when you received your medical, was it very difficult to come back out into civilian life? And how were you treated receiving a medical discharge? And did people understand the RP situation and the reason why you had to leave under a medical discharge?
Yeah, they did. That never was an issue at all. And even, you know, even my officers and fellow enlisted men, you know, didn't react much at all, other than they were saying sorry to see me leave. But no, that was never much of a problem really. And since I was in the reserves and actually had not been away on active duty all that much, you know, I was working a job and everything at that point, so it really was not much of an adjustment at all.
Okay, if you had not had the RP, would you have made military a career, or would you have just served your term and then left?
I probably would not have made it a career, no, because the particular area that I was in was one that didn't tend to be used all that much. I mean, there wasn't that much demand for medical depots, actually. And in fact, a few years after I was discharged from it, that particular unit disbanded.
Well, very interesting, Parker. And again, I want to say thank you again for serving for our country. So thank you.
Well, I was very happy to do it. But I always feel like, you know, people like John Harris that were in Vietnam deserve a whole lot more respect than I do.
I think each and every person that has served, whether it be male or female, deserves a lot of respect, no matter what position or rank they held in our military, because it gives us the rights that we still have today. All right, Parker, I'm going to throw a surprise question in here. Parker, tell us how old you were when you got your first kiss from a girl.
Teresa, I'm going to get you one way or another. I trust that everybody is sitting down because I don't want anybody to fall over laughing and get hurt. I am sure that I probably kissed some girls in spin the bottle games and birthday parties, but I don't really remember it. I was actually 16 when I kissed my first girl, and she was the one that I married, actually. So, and the funny part about this is I was always kind of bashful, and I wasn't real forward. And I had a good friend who lived across the street from me, and his sister was a good friend of my then girlfriend, Jane. And his sister stopped me one day, and she said, "Jane wants to know if you're ever going to kiss her." So, obviously, I wasn't real forward about that kind of thing, but I would have been 16 before I kissed a girl.
Oh, Parker, you told me a little bit of story about how you met her. Will you share that with everybody else? Because you and I discussed it a little bit. We just don't think that happened by chance. Will you share that?
Yes, I will. I have a lot of faith. I'm a very religious person, and I give the Lord a lot of credit. And I really, really believe that He had a definite hand in me meeting my wife. I had gone across the street to this same friend whose family had a TV set before our family did, and I had gone over to watch television. We were just sitting there watching. And his dad had to go pick up his sister, who was in the city band. And he said, "You guys, you want to ride along just for the fun of it?" And we said, "Well, sure, we're not doing anything else, really." So we rode along and went over to pick her up. Well, his sister was a real good-hearted young lady who invited a whole bunch of people to ride home with us. So that car was jammed. And when we got in, they all got in. She started introducing everybody to Dick and I. And I got introduced to my wife and something, or to my future wife, I should say. And something went click. I thought, like, I have got to get to know her. And I really give the Lord the full credit on that, because had I said no, and, you know, or had I not been over there watching television, I would probably never have met my wife.
And that's why you and I believe in no coincidences. God had a hand in that. Parker, I know that you lost the love of your life not many years ago, but tell us a little bit about her, her name, and tell us a little bit about her, how long you guys dated, and tell us a little bit about when you found out you were going to be a dad.
Okay, my wife's name was, when I met her, was Jane Ann Lewis, and we actually dated for 4 years before we got engaged, and then we were engaged for 2 years before we got married. So we went together for 6 years before we were married, and we were together 36 years. She developed gastric cancer. And there was nothing, by the time they discovered it, there was nothing they could do. It was throughout her whole abdomen, and there just wasn't anything that they could do. And I mean, I was just absolutely devastated, because I could not comprehend losing her. I am blessed with three daughters, one of whom is practically the mirror image of her mother. Not necessarily totally in looks, but in behavior and everything. So I have been blessed that way. Jane has been gone now. It'll be 24 years this next November. As I said, we were married 36 years before she died.
So, Parker, tell me when she came to you and said, "Parker, we're going to have a child." Tell us a little bit about your three daughters, and tell me how you felt when you first found out you were going to be a father.
Well, I was actually thrilled to death, and so was she. She had gone, and I didn't really. I was working downtown at that photographic store that time, and Jane. It was kind of interesting, because Jane had a very distinct walk, and even though at that point I had pretty good vision, but I could spot her walk way before I could see her face. And I saw her coming down the street, and I could tell she was looking like she was pretty happy. And so we found out, she said, "We're going to have a baby." And I'm going like, "Oh, boy." And so I said, "Well, how about we go out and have dinner to celebrate?" So we went out to a nearby restaurant and had dinner to celebrate it. That was my oldest daughter, Wendy, who lives here in Springfield with me. And then we had two more girls, Amy and Becky. Amy and her family are in Powder Springs, Georgia, which is one of the Atlanta suburbs. And my daughter Becky is married to her second husband up there in Iowa. They have a 900-plus acre farm that they live on up there. And, you know, she absolutely loves it up there. So I've got three girls that I think very highly of.
And you should. I'm sure you're a wonderful father, and as was your wife, was a wonderful mother. Parker, you told me you have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I could not believe it. How many grandchildren and great-grandchildren do you have?
Well, I have five grandchildren. I have three girls and two boys who are grandsons or grandchildren. And I have six great-grandchildren. And the scary part of that is those six great-grandchildren, there's only two of the grandkids have started having kids. There's three of them who, as yet, two of them aren't married yet even, and the one that's married hasn't had any children yet. So I hate to think how many great-grandchildren is going to be once they all start having kids.
Wow, you actually could see great-great-grandchildren, Parker.
I hope not.
Well, I hope so, Parker, because you're just a terrific person, and I'm sure you're a wonderful grandfather. All right, Parker, let's move on a little bit. Tell us about your career, where you went after you left the military, and what your career was up until you retired.
I don't know if you're really ready for this or not. I had a hard time initially finding myself and getting into what I wanted to do. After I got out of the military, I worked with that photographic store for a number of years as manager. And back in the 1950s, they had the photographic specialty stores, which this one was. And then about that time, they came along with a lot of discount stores and drug stores, all of which started carrying cameras and selling cameras. And eventually, the photographic specialty store just couldn't compete. And that one ended up going out of business, unfortunately. So then I sold insurance for a while. I worked for about 6 years for an Oldsmobile Buick Cadillac dealership in two or three different departments. Spent most of my time in the service department helping to repair cars. And then the interesting part is, and here comes the Lord helping me out again, my wife was a teacher right straight out of school. I had a college degree, but I did not have a teaching certificate. And she was a teacher right from the word go, and I had worked along with her various times, and I really kept kicking myself for the fact that I had not gotten a certificate when I was in college. But because I had three children, a house, and a wife, I really could not afford to go back to college. And that was, by that time, I was in my later 20s, early 30s, and my eyes did become to really start to be a problem. I was hired by the Cedar Rapids Community School District as a assistant director of transportation in the buses. So part of my job was driving buses. And at that point, that's when my eyes really started to cause problems. And I was informed that what the problem was, that they couldn't really do anything for it. And the Iowa Commission for the Blind asked me, they said, what would you really like to do? And I said, well, I really think I'd like to be a teacher. And so they sent me back to school, back to college, and went back to CO again, and got my teaching certificate, and ended up teaching in the Cedar Rapids Elementary School System for about 20 years. And that was, as far as I was concerned, that was one of the best times of my life because, it was the Lord's hand in that. He was giving me a push and saying, you haven't been paying attention to what I've been trying to tell you. And he started shutting doors and opening other ones, and it made it possible for me to go back and become a teacher.
Okay, Parker, tell us, did you teach the same grade or a certain subject in elementary school, or did that change over the years?
It changed. In elementary school, you are basically qualified everything first through, first through eighth, actually. I taught second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth at various times. Most of the time I taught third grade, and that was the age I loved, because at that age they're old enough that they're independent, but they're also young enough, they still are excited about school. And so that was the age that I really loved. And you teach pretty much everything. The only thing I didn't teach was music and art, and it was a good thing for the kids I didn't, because I don't have any talent in either of those areas.
Well, I'm sure that you have a lot of memories from teaching all those elementary school kids, but there's got to be one that really sticks out, that when somebody asks you about your teaching career, this is the one that you always tell. What is that story?
Well, actually, this kind of digresses a little bit from school. During the time that I was a teacher, I became associated with the American Red Cross in the CPR classes. And of course, being a teacher, it was kind of second nature that I ended up becoming a Red Cross CPR instructor. And after I had been an instructor for a while and trained a number of people in how to do CPR, I ended up being a CPR instructor trainer and training new instructors. But the reason it stands out so much for me is that I wasn't actually teaching the kids, I was teaching adults and high schoolers. But the thing that made it really, really stand out is that I had, over the years, I did that for 12 years while I was, at the same time I was teaching school. And I had a lot of people come back that I had trained, and just jumping up and down with excitement and telling me about they'd actually saved people's lives. And so there was probably between 5 and 10 lives that were saved as a result of the people I taught. And believe it or not, you know, things always come home to roost, I guess you have to say, because I actually saved my wife's life one day with the Heimlich maneuver, which was part of that training. And we were eating dinner, and she stood up and came over to me, and I did at that point, I still had a little eyesight, but not too much, and she backed up to me, and I said, can you talk? And that's the first thing you always ask a person that's choking, if they can talk. If they can speak, they're okay, and you leave them alone. She could not. And so I immediately performed the Heimlich maneuver on and popped out whatever it was that was, you know, holding her throat. So, I mean, that is the thing I remember most about teaching, really, even though that was not directly related to my elementary school.
Wow, Parker, to have people come back and tell you that they've actually learned something from you, especially CPR, and save lives, that must be very gratifying for you. I know it would be for me.
That's why I said that's the thing about my teaching career that really stands out more than the, you know, the school. There's a lot of good memories with the kids and things that I worked with, and I just have a really close association with quite a few of them still.
So while you were teaching these elementary school, you were having trouble with your vision at that time. Did these young kids realize that you had a vision problem as well?
Oh, yeah, and that was one of the really refreshing things. I was always very open with it. I was, at that time, visually impaired. I was legally blind. And at the first, always on the first day of school, when the kids came and they got them in their seats and we got settled down, first thing I did was tell them that I was technically legally blind. I had definite vision issues, and that because of that, there were some things we would be doing differently. And their reaction virtually every time was, okay, now we've covered that, let's get going.
Well, did you find the kids were very helpful in situations where you didn't have the usable vision, Parker?
Very. That's one of the things I loved about that age. What I did was things that caused me difficulty, I used the kids to do those things. And they loved it. I mean, they, you know, that made them feel like they had ownership in that classroom. They were really part of it. And that worked out really, really well. And I really had very few students that ever gave me any trouble.
I was going to say I worked with a nursery group one time, ages 2 to 3, and they are so accepting, so curious, and so mindful of understanding what blindness is. If we could only take what they know and teach it to adults, I think this world would be a lot better place.
I agree totally with what you're saying. The one thing about kids at that age is they are very open and very accepting about things. They don't have a lot of biases already built in.
Well, Parker, you're just becoming more and more interesting to me as we go along. I want to ask you now, what is the one thing you would change in your life if you could?
You know what? I honestly and truly, I can't think of anything that, other than not losing my wife, I can't think of anything else that I would actually change. I have, the Lord's been awfully good to me. I've had, other than my eyesight being lousy, I've always had very good health, and I just feel like I've been really, really blessed. So I really can't think of anything other than my wife.
Well, Parker, that was out of your control as well, and that was God's choice, and I know it was very difficult, and so, you know, you should be very proud that there's not things in your life that you would want to change. There's not many of us that can say that, so that's pretty refreshing to me. Parker, my next question is, we talked a little bit about this, and you've had time to think about it. What is the one thing that you got in the most trouble for when you were growing up, and how were you punished?
I would have to say I never got into anything real serious. I think probably the one thing that I remember more than anything else was getting into trouble in grade school for throwing snowballs in the wrong place. And I went to a school where they had a playground. There was a street you had to go across. And then the other side of the street, one side of the street was that big open playground. The other side where the school building was. And there was no snowball throwing on the side where the building was. Well, we got into a big snowball fight, and several of us ran back across to the school side and proceeded to fire a couple snowballs back across the street at the other group, and we got caught. And ended up having to go to the principal's office every night after school for about a week and spend about a half an hour each night. And that's probably about as much trouble as I ever got into. It's the one thing I remember.
I wish most of us could probably say that. Probably some can. Parker, tell us, Parker, what is the one thing in your life that you are the most proud of?
I really would have to go back to what I told you about the Red Cross. I think that is the thing that I'm probably the most proud of, because I know that what I did save lives, and it made a difference. And I think that's the one thing that I can look back and really say, hey, this is something that I really feel good about. And the fact that I was a teacher really did help me with that, because that helped me to be able to look at students and kind of point out things. I remember one particular case. I had a mother and a daughter who were both highly motivated because their dad had heart issues, and they both were very motivated about that. And the daughter was trying so hard to help her mother that she was actually inhibiting her mother. And so I was able to spot that and took the daughter aside and said, yeah, I know you're trying to help her, but give it a rest because you're making her nervous. And, being able to spot things like that really helped, so that my teaching did enter into that there.
Well, that is definitely something to be very proud of. And as you said before, that helped save some lives, as well as what you pointed out, you actually saved your wife's life at one point. Parker, let's talk a little bit about VIP Worship Hour and how you started the Worship Hour on VIP. And tell us a little bit about your faith.
Okay. I would, that's another place where I would say that God had a hand in that. And I cannot take credit. I did not. There was never a time that I came to somebody and said, hey, I got this great idea. Let's have a Christian event. That never happened. The whole process started over on For the People. And Jennifer had a worship service over there, and I cannot remember the name of the lady who did a lot of it. Terry probably remembers. But I started attending that just as somebody that just was coming to it and enjoying it. And gradually, things began to interfere with the people who were kind of doing the leading of that. And rather than seeing it drop out and something, you know, not have it, I kind of started to lend a hand and a little bit at a time, and gradually ended up doing more and more of it. I finally ended up doing pretty much the whole thing. I don't really lead that. I just kind of facilitate it. I mean, Barry does a huge amount. Terry and Franklin help, and Becky helps, you know, as you see. You know, everybody's involved in it, so it's a community thing. I just kind of facilitate it. And when we came here over to VIP, when we started VIP, it just kind of came right with us, and we never really considered not having it. It was just part of our routine, so we brought it over here. But it's kind of, I very honestly give the Lord the credit for it, because I think He led me into it. I kind of feel like that's what He wanted me to do. That's why He put me there in the first place, so that would happen. Because I actually, I as I said, I never came with it to anybody with the idea and said, hey, let's do this. It just kind of happened, and I only helped to facilitate it. I'm not really, I can't really take any credit for it.
Well, I enjoy the service on Sunday. I know everybody, Barry and Becky and Franklin and Els and so many of us and others help out, but you're the meat of the service, Parker, and I am very thankful for you. Parker, tell us, let's talk a little bit about your faith in God. How old were you when you first realized there was a God Almighty, and how did you come to know the Lord?
That kind of happened gradually, and I give a lot of credit to a high school friend of mine who, my parents were kind of what they called the Sunday school drop-offs. You know how that works, where they took you to Sunday school and then went on their way. And so he took me kind of under his wing and got me interested, and I started going. And I don't know that I can ever put a time on it where I can actually say, oh, yeah, it just was accepted that there was. And I have had, Teresa, a couple of experiences in my life where the hair on the back of my head stood up almost. My daughter, Wendy, my oldest daughter, had what's called a neuroblastoma, which is basically a bundle in the brain that's full of blood vessels. And they discovered this in Cedar Rapids, and we were blessed with a surgeon who had the courage and presence of mind to say, I can't do this, but I can send you to somebody who can. And we went up to the Mayo Clinic, and of course it was at St. Mary's Hospital, which was full of chapels. And my wife and I were praying fervently every day. When we would, on our way back to the motel, we would stop and pray. And one night in the motel, this voice said to me as I was laying there trying to get to sleep, everything is going to be okay. And it was one of those things, it's an indescribable feeling. If you ever have it, you'll know you've been spoken to. I don't know if it was God Himself or an angel, but I knew that, you know, who it was. So I really have a very strong faith, and I've been blessed all my life with it.
That is awesome. There's not many people that can say they've had that personal touch or experience, Parker, and that is just awesome. And thank God that your daughter was okay. Parker, we're going to move on to a little bit of something here. I want to know what your favorite meal is, your favorite dessert, and your favorite drink.
Well, probably my favorite meal is barbecued ribs and along with baked beans and all that good stuff that goes with it. My favorite dessert is, without a doubt, cherry pie. And I have very fond memories of cherry pie. When I was growing up, we had a cherry tree in the backyard, and there was many a day that I went out and fought with the birds so I could get the cherry so my grandmother would bake a cherry pie. My favorite drink is probably something that I shouldn't be drinking. I love strawberry milkshakes.
And what about your favorite snack? If you're going to sit down and snack on something, what is your favorite snack? And for all of you that he did not say, his least favorite dessert is chocolate cake. I was so disappointed.
No, that's not actually my least favorite, but it's down there, but it's probably not my least favorite. I you know what? I don't really know that I've got a particular snack. I tend to grab whatever is handy. I love Ritz crackers.
So you're not a grazer. Are you a grazer at night, Parker? Or are you pretty well strategically three meals a day?
Actually, I am a grazer, would you believe this, by doctor's orders. I am a mild, very mild diabetic, borderline diabetic, more or less. And I am on medication. And my doctor has actually told me that he wants me to have a mid-morning and a mid-afternoon snack. So I'm a grazer by his orders.
Wow, can't get any better than that. I wish one would tell me that I could graze and it would be okay.
That's kind of what I thought when I said that. Jumped up and down when he told me that.
Okay, Parker, if all of us here on VIP voted you in tomorrow and you became president of the United States, what is the first thing you would do?
Run. You could not run fast enough to give me that job.
I knew that's what you were going to say, but I thought maybe you might have changed your idea.
No, I would not have that job for anything, and I very much admire Colin Powell, who pretty much refused to run for it because he wouldn't put his family through that.
All right, Parker, here is my last question for you this evening. Oh, it's been so enjoyable. I have learned so much about you, Parker. You're just an interesting and very faithful man. Before we open up the floor to the VIP members to ask questions, my last question for you, Parker, is how did you start VIP as one of the founding fathers? And how has VIP impacted your life over the years?
That's kind of a tough one to answer because I was part of the group of it, but it was a community effort. I mean, it was we were all involved in it, and it was basically a wanting to have a site where some things could be the way that we felt they should be. And there was about, depending on what point you counted, about either six or seven of us that actually were in on the initial starting of it. And we just met and talked, you know, what kind of things we wanted, what things we didn't want, and just kind of tried to take it from there. So I don't really feel like I get a whole lot of credit for starting it. I do a lot of behind the scenes stuff now. I'm not out front as much as I used to be, but I like the behind-the-scenes work. But there's about six or seven people who probably get equal credit for the fact that VIP exists.
How has VIP personally affected your life? What would your life been like without it? And how has it impacted you personally, Parker?
I think I've made a lot of really, really great friends. And it's something that I look forward to in the morning, and you know, getting on and and chatting with everybody on the site. And I'm not much of an evening person. I'm much more of a morning person. But I've made a lot of good friends. Terry and I actually met over at For the People, and we've been friends ever since. And I would consider him to be one of my best friends probably. And then we got Becky and Anita and Mar and Barry, and we've just gone on and on and on. I've met some really, really great people that I just think the world of, and would not have met them had it not been for VIP.
Well, Parker, I want to thank you for being so gracious in agreeing to be the VIP of the month for the month of May. You are truly a God-fearing, faithful man. You were a loving husband, a great father, a great grandfather, and you served our country. And it has been wonderful for you to allow me to interview you. I have learned so much about you, and it has been my pleasure. At this time, we're going to open the floor to questions. And as I always say before I open the floor, you can ask Parker anything, but he has the final choice whether he wants to answer or not. So if you'll key up one question at a time and let Parker answer that question before someone else keys up. Okay, the floor is open for questions.
Parker, I know that you're recognized for your industry and know you're a highly motivated individual. Tell us about what your daily schedule is nowadays and what consumes most of your time. What are your projects now and what's your day like?
My day these days, Rick, is fairly relaxed. I typically start out with VIP in the morning. Then I will spend some time working on items of interest or the cookbook or whatever else happens to be needed. I have made an effort here where I live to try to help. I've established some groups here for people. We got a lot of people losing eyesight with macular degeneration. And I sometimes work with them. I just chat with them on, you know, in the halls, or sometimes we've had some meetings. But I am involved in that, and I find that quite useful. And then we eat meals, and I eat breakfast by myself because the breakfast coincides with the time that I like to be in the coffee cup chatting. So I eat my breakfast here, and then we have lunch and dinner, later on. So it's involved in that, and there's a lot of entertainment. My daughter gets me involved in her things too. So I don't have trouble finding things to do, but I enjoy what I do.
I don't have any real questions for Parker. I told him I was going to because I wanted to scare him a little bit. But I do want to mention on what a great help Parker is to myself. He's kind of the right-hand man, and he does tremendous work behind the scenes. Believe me, this guy is amazing, and he really does a lot for the site, so we ought to really pat him on the back. And really, that's all I got to say about the gentleman.
The check will be in the mail in the morning, Terry.
All right. Anybody else have a question for Parker?
Parker, I got one for you. I think all of us, when we talk to our friends on the site, wonder what they look like, how big they are, how tall they are, whatever. Couple questions. Approximately how tall are you? And as far as your size, would you say you're small, medium, or comfortable?
Yeah, I know what you're saying because the voices don't tell you a whole lot, do they, Rod? I'm actually what I would consider about average size. I'm about 5'8". I was 5'8". I'm probably a little less than that now because we shrink. I weigh around in the area of 190. I'm trying to get down less below that, but not doing real well. But, basically, I understand what you're saying.
Anybody else have a question for Parker?
This is Flippin' Wilson, not a question, but folks, this guy is the steady force behind this whole site, as I see it. We can get all tore up and excited, jumping up and down, but there's that steady hand of Parker, and I never met a finer gentleman.
Parker, I have a question for you concerning the board. You mentioned that earlier, that you were a very effective board member for many years, and what was your main reason for stepping down? Because you're obviously quite active today and still got a lot of zest for what you're doing. Why did you step down, and why is what you're doing now preferable?
Well, Rick, I guess if you want me to be truly honest about it, I stepped down because I was being asked to do too much moderation of disagreements between people on the site. I taught school for 20 years, and I broke up I don't know how many playground fights, and I got to the point where I'm thinking, like, I did this for 20 years. I don't want to spend the rest of my life, you know, moderating fights between site members. So I just decided I'd get off the board and work in the background where I love it.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, and you don't need me to say it, but it's a perfectly acceptable answer and totally understandable.
Parker, breaking up elementary school fights is one thing, and I agree with you. Breaking up adult fights is another, and it's a shame that that even occurs to even be moderated. Anybody else have any questions?
I have a comment, Parker, but it's been very peaceful for a few years now. Would you consider coming back on the board?
Boy, are you sneaky. Probably not.
There you go. Everybody heard it. No. Anybody else got any questions?
I don't have a question, but I'd like to say that Parker is very, very well-liked, and we enjoy talking with him in the coffee cup every morning. And the morning he does his laundry, we're willing to wait for him. We all love you, Parker.
The feeling is mutual, Anita.
Parker, I have a question for you. I've been here 1 year on VIP, and it's been a pleasure. I've met a lot of good friends, and I consider you one of the valuable friends, Terry, and so on. And you have a famous line that you're always coming up with. Could you share that with us again?
I got to think of it first, Elsa. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay, folks.
Oh, boy. Dennis Huizenga really got me on that. And I have to laugh. I used to host a bunch of different things. And I had a tendency when I was ready to start the event, I said something like, okay, folks, let's go. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. And Dennis made a bunch of recordings, and he did an event one night on that. And I tell you, I about fell off the chair laughing. And I made a real effort to try to avoid doing that, because it was something I wasn't really aware I was doing.
Sorry, I made it in here late. I'm having computer problems. Parker, did you guys talk about before he lost his sight, he was getting his pilot's license. Did you ever talk about that?
No, that didn't come up, but I actually was. Yeah, before my sight went, I was in the process of getting a pilot's license. And I actually, had my eyesight not been a problem, I would have been an Air Force officer, because the college I went to had AFROTC, and we were in training to become pilots, and this all kind of happened together. But no, I actually did take flying lessons.
Another interesting, I'll add that to the collection. Anybody else?
Great interview, Teresa and Parker. Very proud to call you a friend.
And Teresa, thank you so much for using slow pitch balls.
Parker, I want to make a little comment about the Sunday morning service. I think it's one of the jewels in the crown of VIP. I hadn't gone to church in years, and a lot of times just because of transportation, and I'm really glad that it's there, and I think it's one of the really unique ideas that makes VIP what it is.
Well, there's a lot of people that get a lot of credit for that, and Barry is certainly one of them, because that recording that he plays for us every Sunday, that's takes a fair amount of work to get that prepared to the point where he does. So thanks, Barry, for all you do with that.
Everyone, that is the VIP of the month of May, Parker Waddington. And Parker, again, thank you so much for graciously agreeing to be VIP of the month for the month of May. I have thoroughly enjoyed learning about you. Everyone, the VIP for the month of June, which will be on June 25th, will be Myrna Spears. Myrna Spears, June 25th. Congratulate Myrna for being selected to be the VIP for the month of June. Everyone, thank you for coming. A great interview, Parker. And God bless everybody. Good night.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.